Hey, everybody, and welcome to Section 119 to our Aggie podcast show for the week. This is a show we're going to be talking about Aggie sports, everything from football, basketball, soccer, to volleyball, and whatever else is happening. So stick around. We've got some cool stuff to talk about. I'm Daniel Hansen. You can find me at The Grand Danny.
I'm Trevor Porath. You can find me on Twitter at @Trevor_Porath.
And I am Jaden Johnson. Find me at Jaden the Jedi. We got all kinds of great stuff today. As Daniel said, we're going to hit around all the Aggie sports that are going on right now, as we try to every week. Some of those sports don't get a ton of attention. They deserve a little bit more love. We're going to talk about the basketball team coming up with Primetime Madness here at the end of the show. But before then, we've got to talk about the football team and what is going on there. I think we've all got some pretty strong opinions on that. I'm sure y'all caught the game.
Dumpster fire.
Colorado State. Yeah, I don't know if I want to talk about it, but I feel almost obligated that we should. However, on the bright side, we might suck at football, but at least we're good at football, right?
That we are. We are, right now, we are sitting at number one in the Mountain West. We only have one loss to Colorado College, but I didn't even know Colorado College was in the Mountain West until last Sunday when I was kind of doing some research, but...
I don't know if that makes me feel better about that loss or worse, because, I mean, it's Colorado College. I'm like, we should beat them,
but they're a Mountain West team. They're not bad either. I mean, I think they're like 3-3 in the Mountain West, so, I mean, they're hanging in there. That's some trivia I had no idea about.
Yeah, they're Division 3 in all other sports except for hockey and women's soccer. Hockey, they're in, I can't remember what Division 1 they're in, but.
I don't even know.
They're in, like, probably like the SEC for hockey.
I don't know, but.
Does the SEC have hockey?
I don't think so. Roll Tide in hockey.
But on Friday it was a pretty low scoring first half, and then all of a sudden we just went bam 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 bam, scored four goals in the span of like eight to ten minutes in the second half, and beat Fresno 4-0. That was an exciting game to go to.
I tell you what, this soccer team is sick. I know that, like, soccer isn't the hugest sport in northern Utah, but even if you're not a soccer fan, I caught most of the second half of the game on Sunday, and my goodness, those games are awesome. There's a good crowd showing, and we got the number one team in the Mountain West Conference that went and beat the number two team. That's huge. Whatever sport it is, that's awesome.
It was, you know, I was there too. I called out sport for the Mountain West Network. So whenever and we were up there in the press box, and we're all trying to keep it down when we scored that second score, because we're not supposed to really cheer in the press box, and so we're all trying to, you know, be happy, but then try and keep it down and stay civil. But
it's hard,
dude. Screw the establishment. You cheer when that happens. Man. I mean, it's awesome what the soccer team is doing. Like, as disappointing as, like, football has been, as some of the other sports have been the past couple of years, to have, like, this team be good, but not just this good, but this exciting, it's just awesome for the university.
Well, and here's
for anybody that goes to see the games.
Absolutely. And here's another thing. I looked. I wish I had it pulled up right now. I should have pulled it up. But I was looking a couple of weeks ago at the preseason polls for the Mountain West. We weren't even expected to be in the top half of the Mountain West. I think we were 6 or 7 or something picked by the coaches before the season. So, I mean, this is not just a team that's doing awesome, but they've exceeded every expectation, and they're just out there wrecking it. So, for those of you that aren't aware with how Mountain West soccer works, each team only plays each team one time. Right now, the soccer team is 5-1 in the conference with 5 games left to go. And so, if they win, you know, 3 or 4 of those games, there's a... I think it's almost pretty much a guarantee that they're going to win the regular season title for the Mountain West. And then they go have a tournament in San Diego at the beginning of November.
Yeah, that's going to be the tough part, is they've got 5 games, but I think 4 of them are on the road.
Yeah,
and it's going to be some tough teams. Looking at the schedule, I think it's – they play New Mexico this week, and we'll go through that, like, Aggie schedule later. But then they also have San Diego State, UNLV, and Boise, which are, I think
– Well, and unfortunately, UNLV and Boise, they're the two – teams behind them in the conference, and those are their last 2 games on the road.
So, like, those pretty much, I think, decide the conference, at least regular season.
Very possible. So next week they got Nevada at home. I'll definitely be there. But moving on from Aggie football, we need to talk about a team that's not so good. And that is Aggie football.
Football, yeah. It was very, you know, depressing there watching that second half on Saturday. I remember being at here. I was here at the watch party at the TSC, and you know, the first half everyone's all lively and cheering and all happy, and then you know there's like a 50-minute halftime, it seemed like. So
that was the longest halftime I've ever seen in a football game.
It was ridiculous.
It was longer than the Super Bowl halftime, but I don't think they had Maroon 5 there or Coldplay.
Yeah, they had the Colorado State marching band. I did see that. Give them props. But yeah, that was just weird. Like I remember being at the watch party too. Like first half, like they didn't even have the game up when we were already down 3-0. But then like the 30 seconds between the game before ended and we got on, I think Justin Hervey or somebody, Tony Lindsay, scored a touchdown.
Bright.
And,
Gerald Bright.
Oh, Bright. That's who it was. He scored on that like 40-yard scamper. And we just kind of dominated the rest of the first half. I just do not know what happened after that.
Here's the thing about it. So I grew up in the Valley. I grew up going to Aggie football games since I was probably 3, 4, 5 years old. I'd go to almost every single home game. I remember games that we lost to Utah by 63-0 or just blowout games. I remember the year that the team won one game, and this is still the most disappointed that I've ever been with an Aggie football team, because at least then I didn't expect anything good because yeah, we had Leon Jackson III as our starting quarterback.
Those years you were pretty much coming to watch the other team.
Exactly. Right. You cheer for the Aggies, and under the occasional like rare circumstance that they'd happen to pull one out of who knows where.
They've managed to start Riley Nelson to beat Fresno State.
I mean, that was like the rare surprise. And you know, you'd go to the games not expecting anything. But this year, I've gone to every game expecting something, and they just keep letting me down.
Like back when I was a kid, there was time I actually went to the game literally for the halftime show because it was the Beach Boys. So, and then another team, like you were saying, to watch the other teams, you know, because they actually had Oregon, you know, here at Romney Stadium. Oh, I mean, Maverick Stadium, sorry.
Romney Stadium.
It was Romney.
Maybe we could get, like, I don't know, get some big time, get Justin Bieber here for halftime or something.
No.
Not Justin Bieber.
Let's get Kansas. We did that once. We can do that again, right? Yeah, and let's not get Oregon. This team's already made me nervous enough for when Washington State comes here in a couple years. So, I don't know. Maybe let's hold off on the big time programs until we can prove we actually can play again.
So, who's to take in you guys' eyes? I think that most Aggie fans are kind of feeling similar things to what we've talked about. But in you guys' eyes, who is the most to blame for this loss?
I think it goes both on players and coaches' play calling. One reason why I say the players is because we don't really have, like, especially in O-line, we don't really have that depth. And so they don't have the urge to keep playing with a good momentum because they know they don't have the, oh, if I mess up, then someone's coming in for me, like we had a couple years ago. If someone's guy went and got and sacked the quarterback, well, guess what? You're sitting out. This guy's coming
sitting
in
on the bench
because they had the depth to do that. They don't have this year, and so they don't really care as much because they don't have the jeopardy of losing their spot.
I would say yes and no on that because I do remember before the season started, we thought offensive line was actually going to be a strong point of the team. Like there was a lot of returning starters from last year because last year's line wasn't that great. A lot of people played.
How much is that of them knowing that there's no one behind them to come in, so they don't play to their 100% potential?
Okay, I think that's part of it. But do you think that if you looked at the roster as a whole, maybe it's hard to say with the offensive line because we don't know what the guys behind them are really capable of unless you've been at the training camps and the practices and whatnot. But I feel like overall, almost probably 53 men on our – no, that's NFL. How many men are on our roster, 75?
I think it's 85.
85?
This is like the scholarship limit at least. I don't know if they have more.
I feel like overall, the 85-man roster, almost every single player – is better on it than their counterpart on the 85-man roster from 10 years ago, or from 5 years ago even.
That is true.
Yeah.
I think that we've got more talent, and we're just doing less with it.
Yeah, that's why I think a lot of the blame should go on the entire coaching staff, not just Matt Wells here. And that's kind of what I'm kind of coming to the day since the loss is, like, I'll state a tweet, I guess, that I put out after the game. Matt Wells is a good coach. Like, he's good at preparing a team. He has a good football mind, and he's a good recruiter. Like, he's a good person to have on the staff. That's how I phrased it earlier. He was great as a quarterback's coach, a decent offensive coordinator and stuff like that. Like, good mind. He was able to do football games well. But he's not a good head coach. And I think that's kind of set the entire coaching staff kind of a little bit off on, like, the level it used to be when, like, Gary Anderson were here. In the first couple of years, I think, Wells were here, we had a decent full staff.
Well, I mean, look, okay, we also had, like, we had Todd Orlando, we had Dave Aranda. Like, these are guys who are receiving Power 5 head coaching offers, and those were, like, our coordinators and our assistant coaches.
Yeah.
So, I mean, head to toe, Gary Anderson's staffs were unbelievable.
Yeah, but I think, looking throughout the staff now, like, a lot of stuff we talk about with players and kind of place the blame on there also goes to the coaching staff. Because if we don't have a ton of depth, that can also kind of be traced to the coaches not being able to recruit the high-level talent players that can come in and push the starters for playing time and all that. And we kind of see that in a couple places. I mean, linebackers, I would say, were pretty good there. We can plug in almost anybody, and they're good. But there's spots on the staff, I think, which kind of aren't living up to the Utah State potential we've kind of grown accustomed to the past couple of years.
I'll tell you this. I don't have nearly as much of a problem with the players as I do with the coaches this year.
Yeah.
Because I feel like we have a very solid group. We have a defense. The defense is still playing excellent. I mean, last game, not quite as well, but a defense that had, what, three or four returning starters, and they're still doing absolutely great. And I think that a lot of that is credit to Coach Frank Miley, a man who I wouldn't be surprised at all to see as a head coach, if not at Utah State, then at another school one day. And we've got a lot of talent on offense. I think that a lot of it is coming from the coaching staff not knowing how to motivate the players, not knowing how to call the right plays at the right times, not knowing how to build a true scheme for this team and a true blueprint of what they want to do with this team. Because in the last game, it was pretty clear to me, especially in the first half, but even in the second half, I thought the players were out there playing hard. They might not have had the most heart and not as much heart as we've seen in past years, but they were out there playing hard. You could tell they didn't want to lose.
I know the defense, I could see that. Offense, sometimes he's, you know, like, they're not doing what they should, I believe, you know, because, you know, Kent Myers is throwing it into non-open coverage, you know, just kind of right into the defensive hands.
And a couple of things I see, like, second half is the big problem that we've got. And a lot of that you can put on the coaching staff, I think, because the coaching staff's job at halftime is to make sure the players come out with the same intensity level and energy level. That's obviously not happening. Part of it, I think, on offense is the play calls. It's kind of hard to be, like, energetic and come out with a bunch of intensity and energy when you're pretty much playing to just not lose in the second half. And that's what I think our play calling is kind of tailored to do a lot of the times. When we have a lead in the second half, we just start playing not to lose, and it's hard for the players to be excited about that.
Oh, yeah, and we've talked about that in past shows, is keys to various different games is going out to play to win and not to play not to lose. And when you go out and you got a 2-touchdown lead and then you're already trying to sit on that, we all know how that turns out. And then you go scoreless in the second half because you're not playing aggressively. I feel like, to me, that was the biggest difference between the first and second halves.
Yeah, like I've seen a lot of people talk about, and actually in the Monday news conference that Matt Wells does, he kind of talked about that killer instinct that this team's kind of lacking, and that just goes right to the play calling a little bit.
I think that comes from the coaching staff.
Yeah. When you think of a team that has a killer instinct, if they're up by 2 touchdowns, they get the ball, you're thinking, okay, they're going to probably, like, play action pass, go deep, or go on a very punishing drive. It seems that when we have that, we just do a couple dink and dunk plays or a draw and just punt it away, hoping that our defense holds.
a team that, you know, has that willing drive, they don't go up to – if they go in with a 2-touchdown lead, they're going in for to get a 3-touchdown lead.
Yeah, like this is a really bad comparison, but it's the one that's coming to mind. The BYU game this past week when they played Michigan State, I hated that game. But when they got the ball near the end of the game with a 2-touchdown lead or whatever it was, they didn't just go really conservative and just punt it away. They attacked, they drove the length of the field and scored, and that's what sealed the game. And while I don't want to be like BYU...
We need a riverboat gambler.
Riverboat Ron.
He might be looking for a job here soon.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about that, though.
Yeah, we'll talk about it later.
Okay, so looking at the big picture... The Aggies are 0-3 in conference play. I hate saying that.
It's worse than Wyoming.
2-4 overall is worse than Wyoming. You're right.
Wyoming's undefeated in conference play.
We're 2-4 overall. We've lost. We're 3-9. Is that the right number? 3-9
in the last 12 games since we beat Boise State last year.
That's pitiful. So now we've got. Thank goodness we have a bye. I say thank goodness because a bye means that the Aggies won't lose this weekend. And it's a much-needed break for the team, I think. They really need to get some stuff together. I know that Matt Wells was saying that they need to look internally. They need to figure out what's going on that's causing this drift. So what do you want to see from the team during this bye week? What are you hoping that they most get out of it?
I hope they can just get their minds out of the losing mentality and – just kind of forget all that past and kind of, okay, well, let's take this as a new season, you know, get 4 wins and head to a bowl game.
Yeah, I think one thing that gives me at least a little bit of hope is the 3 conference losses so far have been by 7. I think we lost to Boise by 11 and then Colorado State by 7. So it's not like we're getting blown out of the water. Like there's still hope that we can come back. I think, and Matt Wells, again, his news conference on Monday kind of gave me a little bit of hope. He did say that he felt there's a couple plays that he wished he'd called differently. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping in this bye week they introduce a couple wrinkles, maybe take a couple more shots downfield in the games to come, utilize the crap out of Tarver and Lewis, who are doing awesome for us when we get them the ball.
Houston.
And get Houston in there, too. I would love to see the passing game take on more of a feature role, at least until Mays comes back and gets back to the level that he's at.
I think one of the problems really, though, I can see this too. I'd love to use Houston a lot more, but what I think one of the problems is why they don't is because of our O-line is struggling so much that they need Houston to stick back.
They've used him in blocking schemes a lot.
They need Houston to stick back so Kent Myers can do something, give it down to Lewis or Tarver.
And given that is part of the reason why he's been so successful is because when he does break out from that block, he's able to get wide open and get the easy yards. So I kind of get that. I want to see the team go in. And like Daniel said, we've been really close. Sure, we're 0-3 in conference play, but all 3 games have been really close. And we've gotten the toughest part of our schedule away. We still have San Diego State.
But it's at home.
It's at home, and San Diego State lost to South Alabama. But, I mean, San Diego State's a – let's not kid ourselves. San Diego State's a very good team.
And South Alabama.
We still got Wyoming on the road, who is a good team. If I'm the Aggies, I'm going – all out doing absolutely everything I can to just get to a bowl game this year. Hopefully a 6-win bowl game. They could probably get in with 5 depending on how everything else plays in. You got to hit that 6-win mark. And to be honest, while I don't put the entirety of the blame on Matt Wells like some people have been at this point, I do not want to see him back here next year if we don't make a bowl game because somebody has to be held accountable.
Yeah, that's the part – I've kind of seen a couple of tweets about this. One, Matt Wells is probably back next year just because he's under contract.
Not necessarily.
I mean, it would be tough, though, to, like, release him and get a new head coach unless it was someone from, like, the staff who accepted a lower salary. But the one thing I will say, and this I kind of thought of yesterday, is with the Torrey Greene situation going on as well. Like, you have that going on if – and I'm not insinuating anything with Matt Wells and the coaching staff that they played a part. But I think that might be the only way we see Matt Wells go before next year is if they unearth something there. Again, I'm not rooting for that to happen. I don't want that to happen. But I think Matt Wells is back next year.
Yeah.
Unless something there happens.
You, The truth is, you're probably right. However, if Matt Wells stays on, rightfully or not, Maverick Stadium is going to be about half full next year, and it's going to be a lot harder to get excited about the team.
Well, at least next year they will get some of their season tickets up because of the people, the BYU fans and Boise State fans that buy their Utah State season tickets, so they just get those games.
So they'll be full for those two games.
Yeah, that's true. One thing I will say for the rest of the year that might get me excited if Matt Wells comes by is when we're on 3rd and 8, I don't want to see another 2-yard out route for the rest of the game.
Never again.
A 2-yard in slant in, maybe?
Yes. But, like, we get several times where you'd see, like, Andrew Rodriguez go out for a 2-yard out route, 3rd and 8. Even if he catches it, he's out of bounds at, like, most of 4-yard gain. Just tidying up some of those things would be huge for this football team.
And I'm hoping that Matt Wells understands, and I'm sure he probably does, that his job may be on the line and goes a little bit more daring, a little bit more risky. It's got to be all out for a bowl game at this point.
Yeah.
Moving on from Aggie football, it pains me to talk about.
But
so
there was
moving on, I don't know if you guys ever pick up a copy of the Utah Statesman. If not, you absolutely should. It's there's some very good writing in there. I don't say that because the three of us occasionally have columns, but I mean other writers in there. There's some very good sports articles. And on Monday morning's edition of the Statesman, I don't think that anybody could have said it better than Logan Jones on the front page.
Logan Jones and Thomas Sorensen.
With a big, bold headline, 3 weeks till basketball season, and underneath a picture of the football game. basketball season, it seems like it's further away from me than it really is, but they got their primetime madness this Friday night, and just three weeks after that, November 4th
is the first game, I think.
And that's the exhibition game?
Yeah, that's we play Southern Virginia, so BYU East pretty much. But that's November 4th. We play, I think, NJIT, I think, after that. So just a couple exhibition stuff.
NJIT, seriously, they upset some good teams. Last year, like, in the last few years, they've upset some really good teams. I'm not making that up. Go look it up. Anyway.
Okay.
What are you looking forward to? I mean, I imagine you guys are both headed out to Primetime Madness. I know I'm going to be there right up front.
Team blue or team white?
I got to see the rosters first.
They actually just had the draft, I think, today.
They do the full thing?
Yeah, I saw some tweets about it. I'll see if I can pull it up again.
I saw a couple yesterday, and they said they'd be tweeting it out all week. So,
yeah, I saw. They've picked point guards and shooting guards at least. I'll probably be cheering for whatever team Jalen Moore is on because that dude is my man. I'll always cheer for Jalen Moore. But we'll see. I'm interested to see a lot of things in this because, man, you got a team with only 4 returning starters. That means at any given point during Primetime Madness, you're going to have at least 6 new guys on the court.
And not only that, maybe even one of those returning 4 might have a reduced role this year. From who did come in.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Quinn Taylor he might have a reduced role.
Yeah, okay, so they've done 3 rounds so far. So here's your blue and white teams. First, the first round, Team White selected Comey McEwen. The first pick overall, though, was Shane Rector onto blue team.
I think they kind of go in order of position, too, though.
Yeah, they might. I'm
so
not really sure
who's
what
on
it
each
is.
Team?
White, again, that's Comey McEwen. Sam Merrill, and then 3rd round they picked up Jalen Moore.
Going white. Wait,
no.
Team.
No, blue is Jalen Moore.
Oh, come on. You're killing me. That'd
Sorry.
Be a sick team.
Team white is Alexis Dargenton.
That's still a good team.
That's still a pretty good team. Blue is Jalen Moore, Shane Rector, and then Julian Pierre.
Oh, so we're going all the vets on the blue team.
Julian Perry.
Perry.
It's spelled wrong. He needs to fix the way his name
I always
is
look
spelled.
At him just like, I want to make it Pierre so it sounds really cool, but then it's just Perry.
He's not French, though.
I know. I want him to be, apparently, though, so.
Yeah, okay, and you know they'll probably pick up Quinn on that team, too. That's all the vets right there.
Yeah, pretty much, but hey.
I'm going team blue.
I'm going to go with team white, one, because I'm freaking excited to see that. I mean, look at that.
I'm excited to see them both.
Kobe McEwen, Sam Merrill, and then Alexis Dargenton. Those are 3 guys I'm really interested to see how they actually do. So, maybe they might not win because Jalen Moore. But
well, I'm just cheering for the team I think is going to win. So, which means they're not going to win.
Yeah, true that.
Every time I we'll get into this in the football podcast. It was a bad weekend for me.
Bad weekend for everybody.
But
rest in peace, Red Sox.
I'm excited, man. So, okay, so if you had to single out one, not necessarily like player, but one, just one thing that you're most excited to see in this primetime madness, what would you say?
One thing I'd like to see is just how good they can move the ball and how much chemistry they have, even though they're, you know, it's the same team playing against each other on, you know, in the court, you know, so they're still going to have the same team they'll play with on a regular game, so it's how much chemistry they have there to get the game flowing.
This is the blatant pick, but I'm excited to see Kobe McEwen, and I'm going to put a little bit of a hot take here. I don't want to jinx him, so maybe I shouldn't, but if Kobe McEwen stays all 4 years, what do you guys think are the odds he could be the all-time scoring leader at Utah State? If he were to stay all 4 years.
Way too soon.
Way too soon, yes. But
I see where you're coming from because there's a lot of hype and yeah, he's a baller.
Like, this is the best recruit we've ever gotten at Utah State. I think there's a chance if he were to stay all 4 years. But the thing is, this guy might be good enough. He might not stay all 4 years.
Stay away, Coach K.
Yeah, stay away. I was thinking NBA, but that's probably a more likely thing.
I haven't seen anything except for his high school videos, so I'm gonna hold out on that one.
I have seen the tweets but Alan Bishop tweets out.
That does not mean I am not stoked out of my mind to watch this guy play. I don't know what my top thing is. I mostly want to see. Well, I'm gonna be cheering for Team Blue. Got to go with the vets. I think I'm just really excited to see how the younger players perform. That's the real storyline of this. And I want to see how Shane Rector has progressed over the offseason. Shane Rector was a baller last year, but he did have a few issues with ball security, and he threw a few errant passes here and there. So we'll see how he does there. I mean, you can't really take too much away from a primetime madness scrimmage, but it's sure going to be enough to at least get me excited and ready for the season more than I already am.
One thing I did notice about Shane Rector last year, he was a boom or bust.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. He wasn't very consistent. Like a J.R. Smith.
Not as good, but yeah.
Okay, obviously.
One thing I'm also kind of stoked for is just the amount of athleticism that's on this team. Like, this does not feel like the usual Aggie team, kind of. Like, if you know what I'm kind of saying there.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
usually, like, our good players, it's like, granted, Spencer Nelson, Ty Wesley, those are great players in Aggie history.
Mm-hmm.
They were not the most athletic guys on the court at all times.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
But now, I'm looking like this roster, we've got a lot of good wing players. I mean, we still have Jalen Moore. Alexis Dargington, he's a junior college transfer, so he could get a decent amount of playing time to start. You've got Merrill, you've got Kobe McEwen. I'm interested to see how this team actually looks, because there's a lot of times, like, when we play, like, San Diego State, we're outmatched athletically. And this could be kind of the beginning, I guess, of us kind of closing that gap.
I see what you're saying, and I agree with that. I think that we're going to be able to hang in there with the UNLVs and the San Diego States that are picking up the bigger, stronger recruits.
Yeah, back in Stu Morrill's day, we were more of like a, like you were saying, they weren't athletic.
Pick up
more
the form,
like
boys.
It was an IQ. IQ, basketball IQ type.
Gary
Wilkinson.
Terrific
at fundamentals, not very good at leaping and playing above the rim.
Exactly.
Yep. A lot of hype, man. Well, and you know, here's the thing. I want to make a graph of this. I wonder how hard it would be. It wouldn't be too hard. You graph like the Aggie football team's wins compared to the Aggie basketball team wins. And every time that the football team sucks, the basketball team is great. Every time the opposite, you know, the last time the football team was really good, that was like right at the end of the Stu Morrill days when they were kind of dipping down a little bit. So we're in really good shape for basketball this year.
Well, I don't know, because women's soccer is apparently taking all the magic right now.
What is that thing you told me about the causation? Correlation is not causation.
okay, but you... This makes a lot more sense than what you were telling me. Well, tell me what you told me.
Well, what I told you is that obviously the U.S. won the gold medal in the 1500 meters in track at Rio, and the last time the U.S. men's have won that was in 1908, And the last time the Cubs won the World Series was in 1908. And I did get this from the people that were, you know,
the ESPN Sports Science.
No, it was from the NBC Olympics broadcasters. Okay.
Oh. So if you want to hear Trevor go off on all the Cubs reasons they're going to win the World Series, tune into our baseball podcast.
We'll be talking a little bit more baseball. One of those
this week.
Talk a little bit of baseball playoffs.
Yeah. But we're going to move on a little bit. Stoked for basketball. Come to Midnight Madness. Let's make the Spectrum great this year.
But I think it's going to be.
It's going to be sick. But let's go to one of the other teams that calls the Spectrum home. Women's volleyball. Midst of the season right now.
Wayne Estes Center, not the Spectrum. But
no, they play a couple games in the Spectrum, don't they?
No.
Not anymore.
They used to. I'll give you a pass because they used to.
Wikipedia says they do. Someone needs to update that. Homework for...
Go right ahead.
Listen.
I suck at updating Wikipedia. They refuse my entries all the time. That's homework for somebody else.
Okay, well, I'm not going to go into Wikipedia. That's all fixed.
Anyway, what are we going to say about the volleyball there?
I don't know if you've been to the Wayne Estes Center. That's a really nice facility, man.
I went to a graduation there once.
I watch all like the... The road matches for most of the USU volleyball games because I cover them, and most of those teams are just playing like in the basketball team stadium or in like what looks like a little high school gym. The Wayne Estes Center's sick. It's real nice, man. And a lot of times they get a really good attendance there and pack that place, and it gets loud. There's a real home court advantage, which I mean, with volleyball in the Mountain West, you wouldn't think that it would be that huge, but it is, man.
And that means that's huge for us because I think volleyball is starting like a 4-game homestand.
Yeah, you know, so the volleyball team, they've been really up and down this year.
Better than last year.
They're hugely improved from last year. Last year was a very rough year from them. They had two Mountain West wins their entire season. That's what we're already at this season. They're 2-4 in the Mountain West. A couple that they should have won. Couple that they've been really close in there. Almost every game that they've had, they've been just close in every set. Like
yeah, every set's usually like, you know, they're not in it till the end. Yeah,
I think that they lack a little bit of a killer instinct, and it's still a pretty young team. They got some room to grow, but they're at the midpoint in the season. They got a huge 4-game homestand. This is going to determine a ton for them. If they can go 3-1 or 4-0 in this homestand, they're very much competitors in the Mountain West. And they're playing they got a UNLV team who is like 15-2 at this point. So, they could seriously use the support. The home court advantage is real in volleyball more than most sports, I think. So anybody that can get out, they've got games, this Thursday and Saturday at home, and then next Thursday and Saturday at home as well. All conference games, all big ones.
Also this month, they're having... It's a breast cancer awareness month, so the USU volleyball team, they're trying to raise money for the Logan Regional Hospital Foundation Breast Cancer Services for all 5 home matches in October. Dig for a cure. If you want more information, look up their Twitter or go to the volleyball page on UtahStateAggies.com. But yeah, come out and let's get that home court advantage for volleyball too.
No doubt. And I mean, they still got a long ways to go in the conference. They're 6 games in, and I think they play every team or most teams twice. So, I mean, they still got plenty of ways to go, but this 4-game homestand, it's their only 4-game homestand of the year, and it's a huge pivot point for the team. So we'll talk a little bit more about that. We'll recap it in our show next week, talk about how things are going for them. At the end of every show, though, we like to go over the USU Athletics calendar, just talk about things that are coming up this week. We've already hit on most of the things that we've got going on, but we'll kind of just brush back over that, make sure you're not missing any of the events, or make sure that you at least know about them, because Aggie teams could always use support, and it's always a good way to spend an evening or an afternoon. So today, I guess I should say we're shooting this on Tuesday, recording this on Tuesday. But the men's golf team, they're out at the Notre Dame Invitational.
Yeah, I think that's wrapping up today, too.
Which, yeah, and I haven't been able to check up on progress, but that's pretty cool for the golf team to be able to go play in Indiana.
It sounds legit that it's just called the Notre Dame Golf Invitational. Yeah, you've also got both women's and men's tennis this weekend. They got the ITA Regionals And it looks like the men's tennis is an ITA Oracle Masters, which also sounds pretty legit, too. And
those are both out on the road.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, the volleyball team is going to be here Thursday and Saturday at 7 o'clock both days. They got New Mexico Thursday and UNLV. That's the big one. If you don't come to another USU volleyball game the rest of the year, that is the big one. That's going to be huge. That's Saturday at 7.
And you know, one thing I'm really excited for is this Saturday on Legacy Fields, we got a nice day of rugby going on. At 11 o'clock, you can see the number 17th ranked team in the nation, Utah State Women's Rugby, play.
We're ranked nationally?
We are ranked nationally at number 17. Sick.
I was not actually aware of that.
Trevor's holding out on us.
And then at 1 o'clock, you can see the Utah State men's team play the 17th-ranked Colorado State, and so we can hope we can win that and win a ranked team.
When does the men's team play the women's team?
I don't know if that happens, really, but
that'd be kind of behind closed doors, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just at Legacy Fields, so that's – I'd encourage you, if you really have nothing else to do on Saturday, that'd be a good thing to come and –
And Trevor had a pretty sick article in the Utah Statesman about the women's rugby team this past week. That's up on the Utah Statesman website. So, anyways, I think we're gonna wrap it up here. We like to keep the show around 30-35 minutes most weeks, and so we're gonna cut it off. But thank you for listening, and we're also gonna be shooting, as we talked about, we're gonna have a baseball podcast, just a real short one talking about the baseball playoffs
and what's going on
in the MLB, because this is the one time of year, let's face it, this is the one time of year most people care about baseball. Hey, not everyone. I mean, I'm sitting here with a couple
diehards.
Okay, but I personally, I couldn't care about the first 162. It's October, though, so I'm ready. I've been watching every game. And then we've also going to have a college football and NFL combined podcast, just talk about what's going on around the country with that. Again, thanks for listening. Check us out. We got a Twitter. We've started posting pretty regularly on there. We'll have every episode going up on there. It's at 119 Sports. And again, just thanks for tuning in.
Peace.